In neighboring Oklahoma, the southern section of the controversial Keystone XL oil pipeline is under construction. The northern section awaits permitting by the Obama administration. When completed, the Keystone XL will transport a thick type of crude oil mined from tar sands in Alberta, Canada, to refineries along the Gulf Coast. Proponents say the project is central to U.S. energy independence, will stimulate manufacturing, and create jobs. Opponents say the pipeline threatens the environment and is all about oil industry exports and profits. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The Alberta-Canada Oil Sands Preserve is one of the largest such deposits in the world. Behemoth earth movers strip mine the sand and extract bitumen. It's a tar-like substance using steam and hot water. The bitumen's diluted with natural gas liquid condensates into a thick substance industry calls dilbit, diluted bitumen, for transport via rail tankers or pressurized pipe to oil refineries to be processed primarily into diesel fuel. International and U.S. oil producers are all heavily invested in the Alberta oil sands. TransCanada, an Alberta-based oil transport and distribution corporation, was permitted in 2006 to install Keystone 1, a 1,000-mile-long, 30-inch cast steel pipeline to deliver dilbit to refineries in southern Illinois. From there, a second 300-mile pipeline extends to Steel City, Nebraska, then on to Cushing, Oklahoma, a historic oil processing storage and shipment hub. But to accommodate a surge in dilbit, as well as U.S. fracked shale oil, TransCanada seeks to build a new 1,900-mile-long, $5.3 billion pipeline, parallel to the other, called Keystone XL, down to the Gulf Coast. Permitting of the northern section is currently blocked by the Obama administration because of environmental concerns, but a critical 500-mile stretch from Cushing, Oklahoma, to the Gulf Coast was permitted to proceed last summer. David Dodson is spokesperson for TransCanada's Gulf Coast project.
We're roughly halfway through with the pipeline component from, as you say, from Cushing, Oklahoma to Nederland, Texas. We also are well underway on six pump stations and on some operational storage facilities in Cushing.
The U.S. Department of Transportation Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration regulates common carrier oil and gas pipelines. Considered a public utility with absolute rights of eminent domain, as such, TransCanada is entitled to and negotiates perpetual easements with private, state, and federal government landholders. The pipeline will require more than 820,000 tons of steel pipe, primarily sourced, Dodson said, from multinational corporations. Russian-based Evraz operating in Saskatchewan and India-based Wellspun with factories in Arkansas will provide both manufactured pipe and raw steel. But with the Northern Keystone XL section stalled, U.S. Senator John Bozeman recently expressed his concern to congressional colleagues. Here's some tape.
It's important to my home state because many businesses, many hardworking Americans living there would benefit tremendously. We have a large Nucor plant. That Nucor plant in Blytheville, Arkansas, in Mississippi County, would supply a lot of the iron that's going to be used in this. We have another facility, Wellspun, tubular. They make oil pipe. They've got 500 miles of this pipe sitting in storage that they produced to go forward, which should be a great thing. The problem is, instead of increasing employment for the future, right now they've had to lay off workers because of the indecision.
TransCanada spokesperson David Dodson confirmed the Southern Pipeline Project will provide 4,000 temporary jobs, 800 of those in Oklahoma. Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon courted Keystone Interstate to help Oklahoma energy producers get product to market, said spokesperson Alex Weintz in an email for this report. He provided Keystone literature, which stated the project would generate $21 million in revenue. A federal environmental study was issued last year on the entire Keystone XL project, finding no significant impact. But opponents worry pipeline leaks will devastate local watersheds. Anthony Swift is an attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council who researches and writes about U.S. petroleum pipeline systems.
I mean, it's basically a mixture of, kind of a semi-solid, what you might call kind of liquid coal, if anything, and it's mixed with very volatile natural gas liquids to get it to flow in a pipeline, but it's still very thick, and it moves in pipelines at, you know, higher temperatures, you know, up to 150 degrees Fahrenheit. And we found that, you know, pipelines moving or transporting product at those sorts of temperatures are much more likely to leak and to have ruptures. And another thing we found is that this substance, once released into the environment, particularly in water bodies, is far more damaging and difficult to clean. There was a recent, well, over two years ago, there was a spill in the Kalamazoo River in Michigan. And that, you know, is about 1 million gallons of tar sands crude spilled into the river. And spill responders found that their methods for dealing with oil spills didn't work with tar sands. And the end result is, you know, over 2.5 years after the spill, they're still trying to clean it up. 40 miles of the river is contaminated. It's become the most expensive spill for an onshore pipeline in U.S. history.
Using Keystone's published records and federal data provided by the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, the National Resources Defense Council found that the Keystone 1 pipeline leaked 14 times in its first year of operation. And oil spill data generated by that administration indicated that automated online detection systems, like the one Keystone XL will be using, catch only a small portion of petroleum pipeline breaches.
Perhaps more surprising is that they've missed, you know, 4 out of 5 leaks greater than 42,000 gallons in size.
But TransCanada spokesperson David Dodson says the Keystone XL will illustrate best management practices.
Obviously, we are subject to the all current regulations, and those regulations are federal. But we agreed to an additional 57 conditions suggested by the State Department that will add to another measure of safety and environmental protection. And those conditions concern the thickness of the pipe in certain high consequence areas, how deeply we go under waterways with horizontal directional drills, the coatings on the pipe. And the State Department concluded, and this is their conclusion, that this pipeline will be built to higher standards than any other pipeline in history.
Anti-Keystone American activists claim Canadian boreal forest and peat bog removal to get at tar sands, plus the energy-intensive processing of the material into diesel, are all greatly contributing to climate change. An estimated 35,000 of them marched on Washington, D.C. February 20th, demanding that President Obama reject the Northern Keystone XL. Activists in Oklahoma have also been working to bring public attention to the project.
I had been focused on the tar sands extraction in Canada, and I had no idea that they were trying to get to the Gulf with this thing.
Tribal environmental consultant Earl Hatley works with the Indigenous Environmental Network, assisting Canadian First Nations affected by tar sands extraction and educating Oklahoma and other American Indian tribes along the pipeline route about tar sands transport. He's Cherokee and Delaware. He and a coalition of eco groups try to stop the Cushing Keystone Project by suing the federal agency which has oversight on pipelines and waterways. That's the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
With 12 violations of the Clean Water Act, and it's sitting in the district court, federal district court in Denver right now, and I assume the judge is waiting for the whole thing to get built before he rules on it.
Earl Hatley is a member of the Great Plains Tar Sands Resistance, allied with the Texas-based Tar Sands Blockade. Last summer, the blockade made national news for physically attempting to stop the pipeline project. But by fall, things got quiet. Ramsey Sprague, spokesperson for the tar sands blockade based in Texas, said that's because TransCanada last October filed a strategic lawsuit against public participation, or SLAP suit, against 28 named defendants.
And they were seeking, by January, they were seeking $5 million in restitution for damages that they claim that we were responsible for.
TransCanada spokesperson David Dodson refutes Sprague's facts and figures.
It was not a slap suit. It was a temporary restraining order that they voluntarily, and I think this is important for your listeners too, the individuals named in the temporary restraining order, voluntarily agreed to a permanent injunction. It was their choice, and there was never a slap suit, and there was never a damage claim.
Parsons blockade organizer Ramsey Sprague says the suit was settled in January. Members have agreed to not trespass on TransCanada's claimed easements in both Texas and Oklahoma, effectively ending their civil disobedience campaign. But Sprague says the lawsuit won't stop them.
Yeah, from March 16th to March 23rd, Tar Sands Blockade is calling for a week of action against TransCanada's investors and tar sands profiteers. We've already had about 60 actions that are planned at this point, and many, many more are destined to be happening.
On February 12th, a handful of activists from the Great Plains Tar Sands Resistance were arrested for occupying a pipeline construction site in Seminole County, Oklahoma. The Great Plains Group has not yet been sued by TransCanada. Earl Hatley was on hand for that protest as well, although not arrested. And his perennial message is that the Keystone Pipeline is not about U.S. energy security.
It's not for America. It has nothing to do with us. It's for export. The companies that are extracting it own the refineries in Texas and the markets in the Far East. It's not for us. It was never intended for us.
Even if the Northern Keystone Route is never constructed, the Southern Route, scheduled to be online later this year or next, will, for the first time, open the Canadian tar sands and U.S. fracked oil spigot. Plus, TransCanada and its big sister and biggest competitor, Enbridge, have several major tar sands pipeline networks on the drawing board to service the booming Alberta oil sands preserve, which some liken to Saudi Arabia. And one of their biggest customers? China. To make way, the Canadian government has reportedly clear-cut the permitting process and classified environmentalists who stand in opposition to tar sands pipelines as domestic terrorists. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.